I'm actually going to be talking about joint work that I did with some people in this conference. So that's Andrea Song, and also another author. So let me write their names here. This is actually kind of it's a paper from that appeared 2 years ago. So you may wonder why I want to talk about this and not recent work. Well, basically the reason is that we heard a little bit about semi-indefinite programming today. And I was going to talk about something that somehow, that's in spin glass theory. And we've seen lots of talks about that. And I think that what I'm going to talk about from the physical perspective is not that interesting. Well, it's nice mathematically, perhaps. But yeah, so this talk is going to be about landscapes and a particular problem that appears in computer science that was mentioned by Ankur this morning. And that's the max cut problem. And somehow it's a problem where, just to give you, okay, so I should give you a title, right? So let me, well, the paper has more stuff, but let me say this low rank approach to STP or max cut. Okay, so what is this about? So, as you heard this morning, there's this difficult max cut problem in computer science. We have an approximation algorithm for it based on this idea of semi-definite programming, which I'm going to remind you what it is. And it's very nice because it's a polynomial time algorithm. It gives you an approximation guarantee, right, with this constant alpha GW that he showed, saying that the solution you get out of the STP is never worse than 87% the best cut in the graph. But it turns out that STP as an algorithm has some problems. I mean, it's polynomial time, but as John Maynard Keynes is reputed to have said, in polynomial time, you're all dead. So, I mean, it's a polynomial at the time with a large exponent that is a complicated algorithm that it takes a long time in practice. So the actual code is, in the long run, we're all dead. So it's a kind of an algorithm that takes a long time to run in spite of being polynomial time, right? And, well, let me remind you first what the problem is, right? So you have a graph given by an adjacency matrix. And, okay, so what's max cut? Adjacency matrix today. Max cut is the problem of trying to maximize. I'm going to use slightly different notation than what Ankur used. He used zeros and ones for the decision variable, so decide which side of the cut you are. I'm going to use plus and minus ones, so I'm going to just write it as a sum over I and j. Aij is just one if I and j are connected, and zero if not. And here you can put 1 minus xi xj, divide by 2 if you want, and you maximize over vectors of plus and minus 1. So this is just saying, okay, if I and j lie on the same side of the cut, they have the same sign here, you get a 1, this cancels. If they lie on different sides, you get a plus, so you get a 1 here, and this counts as one edge if you happen to cross. Well, here you're counting edges twice, but I don't care about that. I'm just trying to maximize. So maybe I'm going to even remove the 2 here, because I'm bound to forget it at some point. Right, so this semi-definite relaxation idea, it comes from the notion that maybe, well, okay, it's hard to solve these combinatorial problems in p-hard, but what you can do is you can replace these guys here by, okay, instead of choosing signs, let me change the decision variable. So I'm going to take vectors . Can you all read this file now? Okay, right? Well, hopefully. I'm going to change my vectors of unit norms. Instead of signs for each vertex, I have vectors. And I replace these guys here by inner products. So, of course, this is the same if all these vectors live in a one-dimensional space, in the same one-dimensional space. But it could be much different if you go to higher dimensions. It turns out that you never need to go to dimension higher than n, the number of vectors here, right? Just because it's the linear span, right? So you can take all this sigma I belong to Rn. So okay, the semi-definite realization at the semi-definite version of this problem is you can write this down as maximum of the trace of, well, d minus a. G is just diagonal with the degrees on the diagonal, right, degrees of the graph. Trace of that times x, subject to x is a positive semi-definite matrix. And where do you get the constraint that these guys have norm 1? Well, it's just from saying that the diagonal entries of x are equal to 1. And yeah, and that's it. And let me just say that, well, this kid, the relationship between these two things is that you take x to be the matrix whose rows are given by these sigma I, so something like this. Okay. So the x is a matrix of the inner product of these guys, right? This is, comes from this linear algebra fact called the Cholesky decomposition that says that any positive semi-definite matrix can be written as V times V transpose. So these are the vectors that make up the same thing. Oh, sorry, this is, so no, this is not quite right. This is the same as V is like this, and X is equal to V V transpose. Now it's correct. Okay? So what is the low rank approach? The low rank approach, you can say that, okay, what's, first of all, what's the original problem in this matrix formulation? The original problem you get if you add the constraint that that the rank of x equals 1, because as I said, this corresponds to taking these vectors here parallel, so they all live in the same one-dimensional space. The low rank approach simply means that instead of choosing, okay, of putting 1 here, maybe you're going to put a number that's k, and k could be anything between 2 and n. As I said, you never need to go above n. So now the clearly stated mathematical problem is this. Let's try to relate solutions of the rank k problem to solutions of the rank n problem, which is the max cut relaxation. Okay? Any questions so far? So I just want to understand, if I find a solution of this rank k formulation, which really means that these guys here, they live in Rk, is this, can I relate the solution to solution of the STP formulation? Of course, the STP formulation, the full STP formulation, is related to max cut. But I don't want to think too much about that step. That's, I mean, that's sort of separate. I just want to relate rank k to rank n. That's the problem. Yes?
So can you solve the rank k thing?
That's a very good point, and that's the next thing I was going to say, which is, well, I am going to say, which is, well, the rank k problem is not convex anymore.
Right?
Right?
Yeah.
The rank k problem has a completely different structure. It's a problem like you're optimizing over choice of n vectors, each one of those vectors lying in the unit k-dimensional sphere, that unit sphere in k-dimensions, right? So it's not a convex problem. It's a problem if you want optimization over a Riemannian manifold. So you're probably not going to be able, or at least in the worst case, you're not going to be able to find anything better than a local maximum to this problem. So kind of the fair comparison here is what happens with the local maximum of this problem. And you can ask this question in two settings. For in the interest of like not going too much over time, I'm going to focus on one of them. Let's just see what the two problems are. First of all, I'm going to there's the worst case problem, which is you give me some matrix A, right? Some adjacency matrix A, and I want to say that no matter, I mean, I fix a rank K, and when I compare the solution of the rank K problem to the rank N problem, but I want to compare local maxima of the rank K problem to the global maximum of the rank N problem. And the other formulation is, suppose you have a random instance of this problem. Maybe not, maybe, and there are many other problems also related, like anything where you're trying to find a planted one-dimensional object in some sense. or okay, but what do I mean? I mean things like the spike tensor model, if you constrain the spike to be a vector of plus and minus ones, for example, something like that, right? So you're also going to have something similar, kind of the maximum likelihood estimator. You can find a convex relaxation for it via SDP. And you can ask this question. I mean, okay, you have a random problem with some planted structure. And you want to know how well the rank K does in terms of finding this rank this planted structure. But I'm going to focus.
So what about comparing the solution that you find for the local optimum or local maximum for the rank K problem to the actual, you know, the rank 1, the actual original max cut?
Right. So,
for example, like there are, you know, there's like a work of Trevisan that beats a half using the bottom eigenvalue of the adjacency matrix. Do you know anything about, you know?
No, we don't know. So I'm only going to be talking about the worst case result. And then it's like Gibbons-Williamson's. I mean, I find some solution that's within a certain percentage of the optimal. I don't know anything about this structure in particular.
You're going to be comparing it to the optimal as well.
I'm going to be comparing it to the optimal. That. So okay, let me state a theorem here. So this function, I'm going to be calling it f of sigma. Right, these, okay, so now there's lots of colors, right? So, but in this case here, where I do the rank k. And just to state one theorem, it's this. So, say that you have a, okay, sigma here, I should say, right, sigma. It's the vector, well, it corresponds to the choice of all these variables here. So I can say that sigma 1 up to sigma n belonging to sk minus 1 belongs to n. And it's a second order local optimal. For f, then we can prove the following. We can prove that the value of f at sigma is at least the SDP. Okay, I have to define these things. One minus 1 over k minus 1. And there's something else here. Which is this. Okay, I'm going to explain in a second what this is. So this is saying, okay, SDP is the optimal with no rank constraint, right? So let's say for rank n. It's just you solve the SDP relaxation, you get a value. That's the value you get. Okay? It's not red. I'm not sure what the colors are anymore. So this should be maybe, yeah, sorry. My color coding is not quite good today. Let me try to keep track of this. Optimum, and let me just say with no rank constraint. And this is saying, okay, this is close to that in the sense that the larger k is, the closer you are, right? You're never going to be better than this because you're restricting your search space here. There's this also this factor here, which is, okay, I'm not sure which color this should have, but let me just, this is a sum of two terms. One is the SDP, well, the maximum for A, and then there's the maximum for minus a here, which is a kind of a funny feature of just saying, okay, take this problem, replace the entries of a by their by minus a, and then you maximize. That's not like reversing the sign of the solution, right? So because it's not the same. But so you get the sum here. And this in the graph setting, which is the setting that we're the most interested in, you can control with not much of a problem. And this is an Amstutzian theorem. That's a clean theorem for the second order local optimal. We still haven't said what that is, but it's basically a point where the gradient vanishes and the Hessian is negative definite or negative semi-definite. You can also, if you have approximate local optima, you can also prove something like this, right? If the gradient is nearly zero, or actually what really matters is that the Hessian is nearly negative semi-definite, you can prove some theorem like this as well. Let me just keep work with this one because it's a little bit simpler to explain. This is for any A, yeah. Just to say a few more things, I mean, this is one specific problem for which we have you have a SCP relaxation for which you can play this game. And, right, by the way, this idea of using rank K is due to two authors, Burer, Monteiro. It's from 2003. And, I mean, there's very good empirical evidence that it works well in practice. I'm going to say a few more things about what kind of theoretical results exist. And, so as we're going to see soon, I mean, there's a whole range of ranks that you can take, and basically most of the rigorous results that exist in the method work for k that's like square root of n. So k that's not too large, not as large as n, but still not very small. And what we show here is that in some sense, if you want to get up to 1 minus epsilon of the optimal solution, you need to take k like 1 over epsilon.
So I have a question about, so feel free to defer this or answer me offline. So I'm curious, so it's true off-the-shelf STP solvers are not very good mm-hmm. in terms of the running times. The best things I know are integer point, and I have like 3.5. But actually, for things like MaxCut for simple STPs, mm-hmm. their faster approach is based on the matrix multiplicative weights.
Yeah, right, by Aurora and maybe Sachin and Kale. Yeah.
So how does the running time that you get here mm-hmm. compare to, I mean, both matrix multiplicative weights and this will get you epsilon close to the Gomez-Williamson constant?
Right, so there are two answers to that. So the theoretical answer, the things that we know how to work out is that, okay, if you want to find a second order local optimum, you have to use some sort of second order optimization method. And that you can use a trust region method, for instance. That's what we do in the paper. The running time of that's not very exciting. It's actually worse, or certainly doesn't beat the multiplicative weights algorithms. The other thing is that the Stanford group, I mean, all the other co-authors, they ran lots of simulations on a few model problems, and it seems that just like projected gradient descent, that means gradient descent on the manifold structure, right, on these spheres, mm-hmm. it converges very fast.
Okay.
And it gives you very good solutions even for k that's moderately small. So it seems, okay, the theory answer is that this doesn't provably beat the multiplicative weights algorithms.
That's in large part because of the bottleneck to find the second order local optima, which is a lot faster in practice than we know good theoretical bounds. So it's at least in an optimistic situation, it beats matrix
an optimistic situation meets multiplicative weights and beats it also, I mean, not only because it's faster, but also because it's, very simple. Space efficient, yeah. It's good in all possible ways, right? So at what time do I finish? Sorry, I didn't think. Should we raise the...
So we have 45 minutes, so at half past, right? Yes, half past.
Okay, wonderful. So I have plenty of time, maybe. Okay. Right, so... Yeah, as I said, I mean, the results on this, and I mean, to be honest, it's basically this part of the paper I collaborated with, but there are other problems. I mean, so the other guys did most of the work, if you look at the 40-plus pages that we have. And but there are other problems that have, as I said, similar structure. One of them, one of the most interesting that we also managed to get similar results for, is this SOD synchronization problem. So you get to see, like, you have and say rotation matrices in three dimensions, and you get to see the pairwise products, or like rotation I times rotation J transposed, things like that, right? That's a problem that comes up in applications to imaging and all sorts of things. So you have these rotations and recover them up to a global phase, for instance, up to a global rotation, everybody. Maybe observe these with noise, and then you have relaxations that are like this, except that, I mean, like, well, okay, you have problems that are like this, but a bit different if you're trying to do maximum likelihood in this one. So, I mean, what I mean to convey is that this is not at all specific to max catch. It is specific to a certain class of problems for which the Riemannian geometry of the low rank relaxation of the SDP in some sense is nicer at the low rank relaxation. But yeah, I'm not going to say much more about that. So, okay, and speaking of previous work, which I really haven't done much so far, okay, I've mentioned Brunner and Monteiro. But there are things that I haven't said, so okay, should have pushed this all the way up before I brought the other one down, I guess. And my eraser is here, so I should get it out of the way. Okay, and now you can see the very bottom of the blackboard, that's probably fine. Okay, now it's fine. Okay, as I said, the whole nature of the problem here is that you want to look at how things work depending on rank, right? So, and it starts all the way from rank equal to one. So this is the hard combinatorial problem. At rank n, you have SDP. And you have a polytime algorithm. There are also these other algorithms by Arora and Kao that kind of, they're kind of solvers for the SDP in some sense. And they give, by multiplicative weights, they get better running times than the original polytime solvers for SDP. Right, so somewhere in the middle, maybe I'm going to draw this on the log scale because I want the square root to be in the middle of this interval, kind of around the middle. So this is a point that we also know a few things about from recent work by some permutation of Bandeira, Bumau, and Vorodnitsky. Well, they're going to be mentioned a few times here. But it turns out that they have different author orders in the different papers, so I didn't keep track of those. So what is known about this? So here, it's that local optima are global solutions. So, okay, local optimum may, a second order local optimum. This is not quite right. So what I meant to say is that there's only one local optimum, which is therefore global. So the problem has a nice structure. So one optimum. I mean, for this, they need some sort of assumption on that the matrix A that you're working with is generic in some sense, but the result's much broader than the SDP relaxation. It's broader than other results as well. It applies to a wide range of SDP formulations.
And it works
above square root of n? Yeah, for above square root of n, so anywhere to the right of this point. And that there's more recent work by, okay, forget the names of the authors, so I have to look them up, by Pumir, Gelassi, and Bumar, who show that, in fact, you don't need to look at generic matrices, you can just take small perturbations, so it's the framework of smoothed analysis of algorithms, and they can prove good things about this point as well. So for constant K, I mean, there are results before, even for K equals 2, by these guys as well, in a setting that's very much related to the SDP relaxation, which is called Z2 synchronization, which is like the spike model with a vector of signs. And there's also community detection here. And so for random instances of certain problems, they can do stuff here for K equals 2. So as I said, our result doesn't require any kind of randomness, But if you're talking about random instances, say, of Z2 synchronization, then we can do some things here with slightly better signal-to-noise ratios that you can do. And I mean, there's a little bit more. So, but yeah, our concern here is more like K somewhere around 1 over epsilon, something like this, right, if you want to get an epsilon approximation. So we're here. Right, so, okay, so maybe for the... What was that? Oh, the K equal to results like this. So, I mean, it's a different problem, right? It has the same structure, but it's a different problem. So you're talking about, say, community detection in the stochastic block model with two communities, say, of equal sizes. And the result is that at a certain signal-to-noise ratio, you can use the rank 2 STP to find a vector that correlates with the community structure. Above a much higher signal-to-noise ratio, you can actually find the exact community structure, so you can prove that the only solutions to the rank 2 STP problem give you exactly the solution, the community structure. Yeah, so, okay, so in the case where you have a problem with the planted structure, then you can ask whether the planted structure is recovered, right? So in these random instances, that's what they do. And we also do something like that for... So in this result here, we don't do overlaps. I mean, that probably wouldn't even make sense because you can have cuts that are kind of 87% optimal, but not quite optimal, right? So you don't.
Do you know, in theory, saying that if you solve the K-rank problem, then how close the local minimum, not the value of the function?
No, I don't know of any theory like that. It would be an interesting question to. Well, okay, it's for the spike tensor model, the spike matrix model, that makes sense, right? So for community detection, it's something related to the average degree in the random graph and the differences between probabilities, right? The problem is like a random graph model where you have two groups of people, and then you have a value P for intra-community connections, and you have a value Q for inter-community connections. So there's a signal-noise ratio related to like P plus Q divided by the square root of P minus Q or something like that. So that's sort of the natural thing to look at because it gives you the phase transition for the problem.
But in the general max cut thing, there is a notion of signal-to-noise ratio?
No. So the max cut is different. Sorry, I think so.
The question that I asked is already in the
model. Which part of it?
Oh
no. Okay. So I thought he meant about the max cut. No. You're asking about the? No. Sorry. No. I got confused then. Yeah. There are results saying both for community detection for the C2 synchronization that give you something about the overlap, and it's slightly better than this previous work for larger K. Yeah. Sorry. Right. So okay. So now I'm gonna, unless there are more questions, I'm just gonna give you a very quick sketch of the proof, and maybe mention a few more things towards you. Because the proof, I mean, okay, so Ankura asked this question about how well this does algorithmically, right? So it's, as I said, what we can provably do with algorithms is not particularly exciting. The empirical results seem to be good. But I think that the most interesting thing here is the structure somehow that you, the proof that we have to show that this happens is very specific to STPs, but perhaps, I don't know, people will find some ideas in it to kind of generalize. Okay. So, yeah, maybe I'll shrink this line a little bit or just do like this, otherwise I'll run out of space very quickly, and I don't want to have that. Yeah. Yeah. So, what is a proof like? The very first thing, the thing we need to start with is, I mean, as I said, we're talking about second-order local optima. So that involves a gradient and a Hessian, right? But it's not necessarily the gradient and the Hessian that we first think of, which we compute by partial derivatives directly, The point is that we're working on a on the space that's a product of spheres, right? So it's, I mean, the what the trying to get a product, it's, if we want to say in a fancy fashion, this is a Riemannian manifold, and there are kind of intrinsic definitions of Hessian and gradient there. But if you want to look at it a different way, I mean, if you're moving on a sphere, and you say you have a fixed vector in a sphere, and you want to move on the sphere, not all moves are permissible, right? You have to move in an orthogonal direction. So if you're looking at perturbations of a solution, they're like what happens if you take one of those sigmas and add an orthogonal vector to it, walk a little bit in that orthogonal direction. So okay, what am I saying here? Maybe I'm just gonna show, I'm gonna tell you exactly the condition we need. So, and okay, one thing that you can say is just say that, you take a sigma, right? So you have these sigma 1 up to sigma n belonging to S and k minus 1 n with such that for all other solutions that you take sigma prime that are epsilon close to sigma, you want their values of F to be less than the value of sigma plus something that's much smaller than epsilon squared. So that's kind of geometric definition. I'm just saying, okay, what's a local optimum is something that you cannot improve upon by moving a little bit up to an error that's much less than epsilon squared, up to an error that's much smaller than the perturbation squared. Okay? So a global optimum would be something, a local kind of, right, so what am I saying here? Yeah, so if you want to have a global optimum, you forget about this, you forget about this, right? Okay, but what does this give us, right? So you have to do some computations here, but I'm just going to tell you what the formulas look like. So, and this is going to mean two things. Well, first of all, one thing, that there exists a diagonal matrix. And actually, the trace of this matrix is precisely the value of F of sigma, such that for all choices of vectors, they're orthogonal to sigma 1, sigma 2, and etc. In our K, you have the following. Right, so this is just, if you don't like this somehow, this is a clean mathematical statement, and I'm going to show to you why it's correct. Okay, this is U, not V. But the idea is more or less like this. So as I said, if you want to perturb sigma, and you want to remain inside the sphere, you've got to perturb sigma 1 by something that's orthogonal to it, and also sigma 2, that's like the tangent space, right? So also with sigma 2 and sigma n. And this is saying that at the level of second derivatives, I mean, this is like the Hessian or minus the Hessian, so what you need is to have, what you know about a second order local minimum is that you have this property here. That no matter which orthogonal vectors you choose, you have this thing. Okay, A is just your original matrix you had, and this lambda is a diagonal matrix. Okay, why is this important? Let me show you, let's think about, remember I had this this guy over here, right? So let me actually call these VIT. I'm So I, suppose I have some, this is potentially rank n, right? Or, okay, the color is wrong again, sorry. So what does it look like if I try to compute my STP formulation was something like this, A I J where was it? Okay, let me okay, let me just put it like this. Okay, assume, and this is not going to be true, but let me just lie to you a little bit, and then I'll make up to you. So assume that somehow X maxima is an SDP solution. And it has that form up there. And so okay, let me see if I'm not doing something stupid here. Oh, that's right. Then I claim, and it's a simple calculation to check, that F of sigma minus let me just say F of X, right? So the quantity you get over there. It's a sum, n, and I hope I'm not doing something wrong here. Let me see. Okay, let me check my notes. No, I think it's all right. Okay, let me present it backwards because I think it's probably going to be clear. So I want to use this condition somehow to relate back to the solution here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to choose vectors u1, u2, up to un in these tangent spaces, right, these orthogonal spaces, so that when I write down this expression, I get something in terms of x. The solution to the larger problem. Okay? And here's what I'm going to do. And I mean, there's no particular reason why you'd think of that in the first place, but it turns out to work well. I mean, okay, so I have these vectors v here, and I'm going to look at something like this. So, I mean, it's a proof based on the probabilistic method. And I'm going to take vectors like this. I'm going to take wi to be equal to three things. So first of all, I'm going to take the vector vi. And remember, the v's are the vectors coming from the SDP solution. And I'm going to multiply it by a random matrix. And this random matrix is what? It's something that has k rows and columns, right? So vi. These vi's live in Rn, and I want to map them down to k dimensions, which is the space where these guys live. And the entries of the matrix are just n, 0, 1 over k, iid. And but I also need, if I want to be in the tangent space, I want to take an orthogonal projection with respect to sigma 1, and that's exactly what I'm going to do. So let me just say, okay, I minus the outer product here. Right? So this is a valid choice for these vectors ui, no matter what g is, right? G is random, but it's always a valid choice. So what I have here, of course, is that if I just take this sum and I put the wi's here. This is always greater than 0. That's just the expression above. But I can also put an expectation in front, because if I take the expectation of something no negative, I still have something no negative. Okay, and what do I get from this expression? And that's the remarkable thing. I mean, that's kind of, as in many other applications of probabilistic method, there's a bit of magic on how you decide to do things randomly, but there's a logic to it, but in the end you can always check the result, right? So, okay, so what do you get here? You get exactly the following. So once you write down the expression that you have, you get something like this. You get f of sigma, and you get f of x, which is really the STP value. And you get something that's more complicated, that's like a sum of terms like this, which I'm going to show to you, is sum over ij. Let me put it like this. So it's that something that you can write down in terms of trace of A times some other matrix here. But there are factors missing, and the factors are like this is, am I correct here? Yes. Oh. This is like, okay, I'm already kind of already multiplied this by some factors. Of course, if this is greater than zero, I can multiply both sides by whatever I want. And this is k minus 2 over k minus 1. And this is like k minus 2. And this has to be positive or negative, positive or no negative. Yeah. And then, lambda disappeared basically because if you look at the way this acts on the diagonal, right? So if you look at this expectation of wi times wj, it's going to actually be wi squared. So you're going to have something like the expectation of the norm. And so what's going to show up here is something like the trace of lambda. And this trace of lambda is precisely f of sigma. So that's where f of sigma is coming from. But yeah, I don't think I got the terms quite correctly here. No, so there's going to be something else as well. So this is going to be, I made a mistake here. So I'm going to have k minus 2 over k f of sigma. I'm going to have k minus 1 over k stp. And I'm going to have, in the end, also third term, which is like 1 over k trace of A times some matrix, and this is greater than 0. Now it's correct. And why is this good? Well, okay, these are the two things I want to relate in the end. This is something that I don't have much control over, but the point is that this matrix that appears here is positive semi-definite, and its diagonal elements are equal to 1. Yeah. So what happens is that this is a feasible point in the space of positive semi-definite matrices where I'm optimizing over the STP problem. Let me get this out of the way, otherwise people won't be able to see this. So I can at least say, okay, this cannot be smaller than minus SDP of minus A. And now what is left to do is just rearrange terms and get the expression on the top. So, okay, there's a trick here involved, which is the application of a probabilistic method. Actually, the way this paper came about is that Andrea had a note, he put it up in the archive with some result in this philosophy, very closely related. And then I saw the note and I managed to find this probabilistic proof, which is something that this kind of probabilistic method stuff I did for my PhD, so I was very happy to find an application of it in this high-dimensional optimization setting. And then other people got involved, Song and Theodore, they did all the rest of the work, basically. So, but anyway, are there any questions about the idea?
Yes. How do you use, in fact, these Gaussian?
Well, you don't really need that it's Gaussian. You need that it's rotationally invariant. And that, why do you have 1 over k? Here's that because you want to preserve the norm of the vector, kind of. So anything like that would work. I mean, you're only using second moments of this thing anyhow, right? So it's not a, Gaussian is a one convenient choice, but there are many others. Okay, so that's the end of the proof of the result that I wanted to show. So let me just say a few final remarks. First of all, I mean, this proof is certainly very specific to the structure of semi-definite programming. I mean, actually, the original version used something called duality. It was proving that this matrix, diagonal matrix, is almost a dual certificate for the SCP, which is good because we know that the trace of a dual certificate is an upper bound for the SCP value. But it's not quite a dual certificate. It's almost. So you have to find the other terms in there. So it is certainly very specific to a kind of problem, but it's somehow the whole idea of the proof is that the tangent space here, as k gets larger, the tangent space here gets richer and richer, so you can represent more things in it. And if this tangent space happened to have dimension n, then you could use this directly to prove that this matrix here is actually positive semi-definite, which is the kind of thing that you do for these duality certificates in semi-definite programming. So what's keeping you from doing this is precisely the fact that you only have k dimensions to work with, actually k minus 1, right? Because you want to be orthogonal to sigma 1 and sigma 2 and sigma. So okay, that's not maybe something for people who already know what semi-definite programming and duality are. Well, the general message somehow is that in terms of landscapes, right, which are the theme of this workshop, we know a lot about the landscape of STP because it's convex. So there's nothing really to know there. In this specific case, I mean, this result gives us some kind of funny information about the landscape of this Riemannian manifold optimization problem, which is that, okay, we don't know if there are many local optima or just one, but at least we know that all local optima of the second order type, they have a value that's very close to the optimal. Or perhaps in this worst case scenario where we make no assumptions on the graph, that's the best we can expect. And the kind of general, very broad open problem is whether there are other problems that have a similar structure and where somehow this geometric intuition will come into play. That the fact that the tangent space is large is what allows you to find a certificate of near optimality. And with that, I'll stop and thank you for your attention.
Okay, so is there one question because we're over time? Okay, so we thank the speaker again.
Well, and maybe you should take the opportunity to thank the organizers for this very nice event. And